Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
What's going on, everybody? So glad that you're joining us on the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. My name again is Jason Cutter, and my guest today I am really excited about because he works for a company called Transparent BPO. His name is Jason Stearns, and he is the VP of Business Development at Transparent, which they're mostly focused on building teams in Belize and around the world to support their clients. He himself has been in business development roles for over 17 years, and he is joining me so that we can talk about both sides that are interesting to me. Because he's leading a sales team, he's got his own internal sales operations that I want to talk to him about. And then as business development for Transparent, he's reaching out to companies. And so he has insight into what other brands, what other businesses are doing, and then how they're helping solve some of their sales challenges. So this should be a good one to talk about both perspectives, the internal and the external, from a BPO's perspective. Jason, welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Very excited about talking about a lot of things, and thanks for the invite. And nice to see your face. As you mentioned before, it's been a while since we got a chance to talk, so it's great to see you.
Yep, it's been a while, and conference season is just starting to warm up. At some point, we, like many people I've been working on meeting up with, will actually meet in person, so that should be fun. I'm super looking forward to that. As I mentioned in the intro, I was looking forward to this conversation because usually someone's either managing their own team internally or selling externally, in some kind of capacity, especially when it comes to call centers. But you're doing both because you have a team and you're doing that outreach. Let's talk about what you're seeing now externally, like over the last year. Like before we hit record, you were sharing some things with me, like the trends that you're seeing from a outsourced service provider. And if somebody's not familiar with BPO, it's business process outsourcing. A lot of times that's either admin support, customer service, tech support. In this case here, we're talking specifically, potentially sales campaigns, phone campaigns. So what are you seeing that's changed or driven things for the last year?
I think probably the most important, thing to talk about is just the disruption, whether it was the pandemic, and then really kind of what happened after the, post pandemic. And as we deal with things, I think that the BPO industry had we've always talked to BPO how it's always cycling. There's always been conversation because going offshore, it's going nearshore, whatnot. I've never felt that was the case. I always felt like this is cycle as we kind of test these different markets. But I feel like this last year has finally been truly disruptive, and mostly because historically you kind of had kind of a hierarchy of like offshore or nearshore, we're going to do tier one customer support, maybe some back office operations, maybe nearshore and domestic location, we're going to do tier two and some more sales. And in the US and domestic markets, in-house are the only markets that we truly trust our sales, touches. I feel like that's kind of, for once, it's kind of gone out the door due to the pressures of hiring people. Attrition's really scaling up. And a lot of brands that I've talked to, honestly, that I felt like if I talked to them a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago, we're like, we're not even going to consider it, outsourcing or our sales. And I feel like that's all gone out the door, and they're really looking at any possible market. And of course, it's the traditional reasons why, reducing costs. But I think also like, hey, do you have a stable geography for hiring? What's their education level? Do they understand the brand or the service we provide? And I feel like a lot of these hindrances or obstacles are kind of out the door because it's almost like a sense of desperation where we need to solve this problem tomorrow. And I've heard so many stories of, and I've been starting to ask the question a little bit more often of like, well, give me an example. Like, well, we just had a hiring class of 25. We had five people. We had three people show up. And so they're dramatically understaffed. And so I feel like that's probably the number one change of the industry trend, especially in the past 3-4 months that I've been hearing consistently.
Yeah, it's so fascinating that you say that, because I think one of the things I saw, which then leads into your experience, is that when the pandemic hit, everyone went remote. There was literally this whole industry, which is call center sales, telephone sales, where I'll just say it, pretty much nobody ever wanted or allowed or thought of having their teams, their individual reps working from home, working remote at scale, right? Like maybe there's some companies with some teams, but not like that. Not when you talk about a call center, and then overnight, everyone had to adjust. And then for me, it seemed like there's that desperation piece that you're talking about, which I want to cover, but there's also resetting the possibility, which is, wait a second, maybe I don't have to have someone sitting in my office to do this thing, right? Because I don't have a choice, which then leads to, well, maybe somebody else can also help me with this, right? Whether it's, you know, a different office or offshore, right?
Right. You know, and outside of the BPO, like everybody in this industry has been challenged to do things differently. And there's been so many amazing success stories of, oh, we got all our computers, you know, and agents' homes in 8 days or 7 days or whatever. It's a lot of people are success. But then kind of the 2.0 is like, oh, wait, how do we hire people? How do we train people now? How do we coach them? How do we get together and keep them inspired? Or if someone's going to attrit, how do we have a quick conversation to figure out, like, why are they doing this, instead of just an email comes in saying, I quit, and that's the end of it. So I think it's just been this ongoing learning process for absolutely everybody, whether their internal operations or with their BPO partner. It's been probably the most fascinating change in our industry in a long time.
So speaking about that desperation part, because I can totally see that, especially when we talk about from a hiring standpoint, a scalability standpoint, depending on when somebody listens to this or where they're located in the world, it's very challenging in the States to hire people for many reasons, which we don't need to get into all those details, but to find the people that you want to fill things, you know, roles in most industries right now, it's challenging. Where are you seeing that leading to with your sales cycles, with your ability to help brands, let's say the desperation, just use that word. And then where is it also like, it's not working, you're seeing companies make the wrong choice out of desperation?
That's a great question. And the second part is, that'd be interesting. It'll take a while to get the hindsight of like, where do you think they went wrong? I think the traditionally our sales process is a long sales process, especially with larger, you know, the Fortune 500, the Fortune 1000 organization. There's a bit of regiment around it where we have kind of our possibilities, and then we have certain questions, and then we evaluate those questions. We have a team to do that. Most brands now, because of going back to the word desperation, they don't have the timeline to do that. Also, there may be a little bit short on their internal resources, and the internal resources are dealing with other, let's label them as fires, you know, that are going on. So they don't even have the resources available. So that timeline is greatly decreased. And they like, we need to make a decision now. Now they're not throwing the process out the window, but they're moving a lot quicker on that. I think there are certain mindsets before of like, we're only going to look at, you know, this geography or this region. I've noticed that they're looking at multiple regions, and also within the regions, they're also adding additional countries within that. Like, oh, you know what? We're going to look at, you know, these countries as well, because we can't leave any stone unturned. We need to make sure we can quickly find the right organization. Hasn't gone away though. When you have these conversations, there's still certain mindsets, which I still always find fascinating, where it could be anywhere from, you know, how strong is your redundancy, or is your, what's your infrastructure look like? And then down to, you know, the traditional questions, if it's near shore or offshore, is it safe? You know, is it okay to visit there? So even though they're willing to look at stuff, there's still those certain mindset where they have a little bit of hesitancy about certain areas or kind of ideas in their head about like what it would be like. So they're still asking the same questions, but they're a little bit more easily accepted when you address them. And then as far as like, if there is a mistake that's going on, I still feel that it's price, where, you know, when you look at everything, and there's some gray areas or kind of those soft areas that you're trying to evaluate, will kind of come down to, well, at least let's choose the lowest price. And at least we can point to that. Like we talked to 12, you know, vendors, and we had this many do an RFI. We chose the lowest price. And at least they can kind of put their, you know, stake in that and say, well, at least, you know, we thought we made the right decision. We'll fix it later on. And I think that's maybe that's happening a little bit more often due to making a quick decision, if anything.
Yeah, and that's interesting from a sales process and sales cycle, like selling to someone who might pick the lowest price vendor, the lowest price option. In my experience, especially in longer sale, multiple stakeholder type decisions, it's really wanting to hedge that bet of if they're wrong, at least they weren't wrong about that, right? Like if they pick the wrong vendor, but it's the higher price one, then they really look bad. They pick the wrong one and it's low. It's like, well, at least it wasn't the most expensive. Right. So something to keep in mind in that sales cycle. And also for any brands, buyers, customers listening to this at any level, right? Is to be careful. They're making the decisions, not just based on a fear, you know, CYA versus, you know, what's best.
Correct. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So got these companies that are actively looking for this. Looking for help in various ways, right? And just industries in general. So when we talk about that part, I was thinking, you know, if they're looking to make these actions, which ones for you, because you've been doing this for a long time, right? So you've been in this industry essentially for 17 plus years. Which ones do you see are going to be successful with, you're not just outsourcing, but also building a scalable sales process, right? Internally, externally, whether they're using, you know, transparent for it or just scaling it on their own. What have you found? Like you talk to someone, you're like, okay, this is going to work because they have fill in the blank, or this is not going to work because literally blank.
man, that's a great question. I think that kind of understanding, you know, as simple as what's the goal, and I'm going to try to avoid using the phrase end of the day, but I said it anyway, right? where, you know, what are we trying to do? And I think then it's like building it backwards to how do we ensure the success of that? So, you know, in a sales thing, I always look at is you're actually trying to solve a problem. So whether it's a widget or a process or a service, utterly you're sharing the opportunity to solve that problem. So if it's like, I'll pick an industry out of the blue, like an e-pharmacy, you know, with an e-pharmacy, you're consolidating medications. You're saving time, usually for an older demographic where they don't have to go to multiple pharmacies. It also possibly saves money for them. And also it helps them manage their health in essence. So it's like, to me, it's like we're helping. So then it's just, how do we make sure that when an employee, whether it's internally or with a BPO, it doesn't matter who it is, when they're talking to a prospect, how do we make sure that they are sharing how they're going to help? So that goes back to kind of the people, process, and technology, and just really making sure you have that set up. So do you have the right tools in place to make sure that, I look at more of like, there's nothing getting in the way. Is it easy to document what happened to the call? Is it easy to look at reporting? Is it easy to for a coach to listen in, live listen, and then quickly kind of provide some guidance or some correction? And then do you have the right process around, like, you have the right rebuttals? Are you have the right kind of intro around that? And do you wrap it up right? Well, are you describing the product right? Is it kind of set up the right way to really, again, make sure they understand how this is going to solve their problem? And then of course, have the right people, whether it's with a BPO or internal, what are the right job skills? Do you have the right hiring profile? And then do you have the right methods to assess them, interview them, and bring them on board and train them? So it's kind of, again, it's more of just, what are we trying to do? And then work backwards and make sure we have all those steps on that. And I think that's critical, regardless if it's an internal or with a BPO partner.
Got it. And I think that's great, because when I'm listening to you talk, it's just reminding me of all the steps that go into building that scalable sales.
There's so many, operation. Yeah. Which just makes this industry overall fascinating. There's just so many pieces. And it's always interesting. It's always evolving because products and service change, consumers change, our world has changed, as we've talked about in the past few months, where everything is always changing. And that's probably why I've always loved this industry, because it's very complex. There's a lot that goes into it. It's not just set it up and it's going to be the same forever. Like, you can't just set up a script and have people dial on it and have the right results. Eventually, those results will slowly change over time. So there's a lot of pieces to it, which you're well aware of, because I know how much you've done with consulting and sales.
Yeah. And I can imagine the challenge that you have. Right. Mine's a little different one as consulting, because I'm going to fill in those gaps and build them. Mm-hmm. But from your perspective, when you're dealing with a potential client, with a brand, somebody who wants your help, and they're missing those things, right? Like the list you just gave, which is a great start to the list of what it takes to be successful internally or externally with a sales operation, like having goals and having, you know, training and having recruiting and, you know,
right.
things that sound basic when we talk about it, but so many companies don't have those things, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, I can imagine the difficulty when you reach out or someone reaches out to you and they're like, yeah, we want you to, you know, help expand our sales operations. You're like, what are your goals? Well, we just want them to sell as much as they can. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, how often does it happen where you meet a company, and maybe you guys don't play in that space anymore of the companies that are not structured enough. But does that happen where somebody's just like, there's a lot of.
No, it happens. It happens all the time, Jason. So including my years of BPO sales, like I've been very fortunate where I did have a stint about a year with a Six Sigma process improvement company, and they mm-hmm. consulted organizations all the time. So I walked away with that with a pretty strong understanding of like kind of all those things that go into it. So when I talk to organization, of course, I'm kind of going after goal first. Like, why are you even doing this? Why are you even looking? And, or yeah. What are your, you know, the traditional problems and pain points? And then as you kind of work backwards, and I have this pretty intensive discovery document that goes through, again, the people, process, and technology, just kind of understand what they have in place. It's interesting how many things are missing from, I'm like, okay, how do you know, what does your hiring profile look like? Oh, we don't have one. Or the most common one is oftentimes training is often overlooked. So it's either, you know, just a bunch of pieces of paper that, you know, is a little bit on product, is a little bit on the system, and this is how you do it. So like often there's these gaps in it. And to be honest, it happens at all levels of organizations. Sometimes certain areas are just overlooked or haven't been looked at for a while. And then the rest of the company is evolving, and there's a little piece of it that has just been kind of sitting there and can get more and more archaic, or no one's ever noticed that we don't have anything in this little bucket for how to do that. So it's always a supply. Okay, now, granted, there's a couple organizations when you talk to them, they're just exceptionally from front to back. They got everything, you know, nailed down. But oftentimes, it's just, And it's not a lack of effort or anything like that. It's just business is busy, you know, and everybody's busy doing things. And sometimes things get overlooked, and it's not as much of a priority as they think it is at the time.
Yeah. And in my experience, too, like this one area will be important, right? If there's all these categories that go into a successful sales operation, one part is important. That's built. And then this is like training is built. And then this is built. And then this is built. And then mm-hmm. everything increases and the company scales and gets bigger. And then all of a sudden they go back to training and go, wait, training is no longer enough. Like that was cool when it was 10 people. Now we need to get to 100, right?
Yep.
And it's just like these steps that happen. And I deal with that a lot with companies where it's like, they never thought of that, or it's old, it's outdated, but it was good at one size, but not anymore. Sales is notorious for promising they can do things that then ops has to deal with.
Right.
And I know that you guys handle things a little differently because I cannot imagine that happening there. But most organizations, you know, sales writes checks that ops has to cash.
Right.
How do you ensure the success so that doesn't happen just in general?
I think that this kind of goes back again to my experience of the, you know, doing a little bit of the consulting working and kind of getting under the hood. But also, ultimately, the reason I do this still, and I've been doing it for a long time, is I ultimately like to help people. I love, probably my favorite thing still is to provide jobs. Now, at the end of the day, like I said it twice, right? I help people get jobs. And that's incredibly satisfying that you know, my hometown of Fort Collins, Colorado, in the past to Belize, the Philippines, it's incredibly rewarding to know you do that. But also you're helping, I love helping businesses and the people that you get to know. There's a lot of great people out there and you're helping them solve that problem. I really don't like the idea of making a false promise and then having this awkward where we're just to get the sale, we're ultimately not solving the problem. So I do like to be very kind of, that's why I do love our company name, Transparent BPO, because I love being incredibly transparent during the sales process as well. So historically and today, I typically don't have that challenge, but it's part of the kind of that discovery of really getting to know their challenges and their goals and making sure I understand technology and their hiring profile. You take all that information and that should be a very smooth transition to the operations team. So they understand everything that I understand from desired geography to their pain point to what their desired ramp is, and when the most calls come in during the day, and their seasonal time, and you know, and tell us the worst time you ever had in the last year, just to kind of know what those problems are. It helps so much in the long run because the operations team is totally on board as well. Like, this is exactly like how they're going to help, and they're thinking ahead of like, you know what, we have the absolute best operations manager. They have dealt exactly with this type of client in the past, or we have a team lead. We're going to make they should absolutely apply for this because they're great at rebuttals with home product sales. You know, like, so then everybody's kind of bored because you really want to have that success of the implementation in those first 90 days, and then from a year from now. So I think that, you know, making sure that you're really going for the smoothest and best result for your prospective client, I think it makes it a lot easier to involve operations and your client services at the right time and fairly early on to make sure that everybody really understands this is how we can best help solve the problems that this prospect is having.
Hey, it's Jason here. We'll be right back to the podcast in a moment. But first, are you ready to help your inside sales team close more deals? In my experience, there's a certain percentage of your team that acts more like order takers than sales professionals. The first step to creating a scalable sales team is to equip your reps with the right mindset and proven strategies to transform them into quota breakers. To build a team of authentic persuaders that will crush their goals, email jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com or go to www.cutterconsultinggroup.com. So I'm just going to say this for anybody that's listening to this, that's in charge of an organization. What you just shared, I want people to hear that, maybe even go back and listen to that. You as a salesperson, because that's what you are, right? VP of business development, but you're selling. And you are so focused on the end result success for the client, but also internally for the employees, mm-hmm. which in my experience is the difference maker of a salesperson who's successful long-term and produces good clients for a company versus salespeople who sell today, don't care what happens, take their money and run, and then potentially produce bad clients for mm-hmm. any company. And I've seen lots of different companies in different verticals, so it applies to everybody. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate what you said, where you're looking at jobs and then like essentially your worst nightmare. Right. And it would be devastating for you if you set up the wrong campaign, people got hired and then people got fired because it wasn't done right.
Exactly.
Aspect. Right. So for people listening to that, leaders, like, that's what you want to create internally is that kind of culture, which I know that's, you know, what Scott Newman, your CEO has done with Transparent, because I know many people there. So I appreciate that just from a, you know, doing the right thing from a sales perspective.
Thank you. Yeah. And of course, there's so many things up front that, and, you know, doing this for 17 years, I have a closet full of mistakes here and there where, and you go back to like, well, I should have said that, you know, a little bit differently. And I think I was very fortunate going back historically where I think I've been very lucky where I actually started out in inside sales, you know, and that's probably, it's a tough way to learn the mm-hmm. business. Because you just have to make a lot of calls and quickly. I always talk about that first 30 seconds, maybe it's 15 seconds to get the 30 seconds to get the minute to then mm-hmm. eventually get those outstanding 30-minute discovery calls and whatnot. But to really get it honed in is very challenging to get to the point and borrow a little bit of time. And most of these people get so many emails and calls, so to cut through that without being too pushy is always very challenging. So I feel like I've been very blessed where I was able to kind of work my way through it kind of the hard way and get a sense of really, you know, how to engage with someone and then build a bit of a relationship later on where you're trusted in both ways, where I'm able to provide something valuable to them.
So let's take a little detour since you mentioned it, and let's talk about Jason Stearns, the salesperson. Like those early years you were talking about, what did you find that helped you succeed in turning that 15 seconds into 30 seconds into a minute? Like, what was it that you found worked for you or that you did? Just so people, you know, in sales listening to this might.
So I have a few philosophies. One, I don't like too much verbiage or buzzwords. I'm more of I'd like to figure out something that translates well. And I'm a number, like we help company X increase, you know, sales conversion rates by X%. That's just a universal language where at least you're thinking, well, I'm in the cable industry and you're talking about pharmacy. If you can increase it by 20%, even if you give us 5% lift, that's pretty good. So like that universal language where, okay, they increase that. That's always very helpful for me. The other thing is just more of, I just don't think that we're very busy people. And I even personally, when I always take sales calls because I'm always curious how they do that. I'm a big question fan. If they're kind of asking a question, always goes a long way where you're learning a little bit instead of just instantly trying to spit out the history of the organization and how long they've been in business and whatnot. There's some things that just are not that important. And then also you have to be very exceptionally adaptable. I know you've had a long history in sales as well, where just every person's different. So you kind of have to be able to kind of quickly ascertain kind of their temperature or how receptive you are and kind of change it a little bit, which is kind of hard to say. I don't know how someone listening to that, like, well, which way do I change that? It's hard to do that, but to attempt to try to change that usually goes a long way as well. And then, I hate to say this, but it is still a numbers game. You can't, I use too many sports analogies or training methodology, but like you can't run a marathon if you don't train a little bit. You got to get up every day and you got to run a little bit and you got to run a little bit harder. And it's amazing 17 years later where it still is a numbers game. You will not get anywhere if you don't pick up the phone or send some emails and or go to a conference and get out of your hotel room and just network a little bit with people and sometimes be comfortable with just learning. You don't always have to get a sale on every networking pitch you make. Sometimes it's just making those relationships. So it's still very much a numbers game where you have to put a lot into it to get anything out of it.
Yeah. And I think the second to the last point that you made about being adaptable, there's always that balance, right? Which is the authenticity piece. You want to be who you are, but then you also got to adapt to who you're talking to and be able to flow that conversation, especially in the beginning, right? Especially if you're turning that 15 seconds into 30 seconds. So
yeah, exactly.
I love that list. Now, how many people do you have on your team on the business dev side?
So it's changed quite a bit. For a long time, it was a very small team. We had a marketing manager and me as a VP of sales, and I reported directly up to Scott Newman, our CEO. We have adapted a little bit where he's kind of moved him more into the head of the sales team. There's another VP of sales and marketing along with me that a longtime veteran, a very strong veteran in the industry. Has a lot of relationships in an industry like me. We have a new digital marketing manager with a lot of experience in dealing with media and digital campaigns and email campaigns and work in that B2B space. And then we've also added kind of an inside, I call them inside sales, to do those 30-second conversations. And then kind of a new role that we added is we kind of call it like sales analytics, but trying to find people in the right, whether it's an industry or maybe someone that's dealing with a pain point. So going back to who might be dealing with U.S. attrition. So what companies might likely be in that, and then what possible decision makers fall under that. Or maybe it's like a seasonal ramp, like right now, summer seasonal, they're dealing with a lot. We need to hire a lot of people, probably dealing with that pain point of having a hard time hiring, but like your lawn mowing companies and grill manufacturer, whatnot. So again, like kind of like this analytics of like who's likely in a need of the services at that time and reaching out. So this the team has changed quite a bit, and the company's grown quite a bit. Where we used to be two centers in Belize, moved up to three. We moved into a new region of Belize in Belmopan, in addition to the Belize City locations, the Philippines operations, and as I mentioned before, previous to the podcast, we're looking at other nearshore locations. So to deal with that growth, like kind of building a more mature and scalable sales team.
For other sales leaders out there or just business leaders who are listening, what have you found works well with that like diverse team? It's not just a sales manager and a bunch of salespeople on the phone. You've got essentially call it five people doing five different roles that all have to be rowing the same direction. What have you guys found? What's some best practices internally for that team?
I'm going to borrow what you just said, best practices. And I think that I I like to point out my faults mightily. I've usually been in very small teams or a solo salesperson, so very much a generalist, which is great because I'm going back to adaptable. I've right. worked in a lot of different industries, but also because I've been working pretty much across every industry possible and every possible touch point from tech support to sales calls. I'm a generalist, and sometimes you're just not an expert in these small areas. So I'm not an expert on digital marketing, and I'm not an expert on HubSpot management and the tools and everything like that. So I think we're really kind of filling these gaps of like, there's enough gaps here that we need to fill it in with someone who's very strong in either HubSpot or managing email campaigns or finding the research and kind of fill in those gaps where you know, we've identified enough of them that, hey, to correct these gaps, let's find someone that's really good at it. It's the best way to describe it.
Got it. And I love that self-awareness of that you said that you're more of a generalist. You're mm-hmm. not super great in these specific things, especially the digital marketing. And then just, you know, having the team. Communication's always good. That self-awareness, though, is the key. Some people just assume they know everything about everything, and then it can get in the way.
No.
They don't realize who they really need help with to fill in, you know, the spots.
Absolutely. I mean, I joke where I sometimes forget, like, you know, my kids' names. But like, so how can I keep track of like everything going on in the banking industry and in compliance? Yeah. It's such a huge spread. It's impossible for one person to do that.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so let's shift a little bit longer talking about the operations for Transparent internally, what was going on. I know that there was a lot of success in getting people stood up, getting through all this. What have been some of the biggest challenges that Transparent has faced on the team side, right? And in servicing clients or staffing or, you know, all those challenges this year. And then what we'll do is we'll talk about, or if you want to just continue on, like what you project into 2022 for yourself and just, you know, call centers in general.
There's been a couple of challenges, and I think some of them would apply to kind of a 2020 challenge with, and I'm sure every industry has dealt with this, and we touched on it earlier, where this transition to a work from home model. So COVID hit everywhere, and including Belize, which is where our brick and mortar locations were operating. Our Philippines operations has always been work from home. So the focus was really on Belize. That when it kind of rolled, everything was rolling, we're like, hey, it's going to hit Belize. We were fortunate, to be honest, Jason, where we saw the impact it had in Europe and the US. So we had a little bit of runway, but we still had to move very quickly. And again, those physical things of getting laptops and in agents' hands was relative. And the IT team will kill me when they hear this, relatively easy, you know, but still was a ton of work. But then as I mentioned before, like what happens next? And it was a lot of things, as I mentioned, like the hiring and the coaching and whatnot. But what was really interesting about Transparent BPO, and I will throw a little bit of sales in here and cut me off if I go too far. But I think what was fascinating is the quick recognition of, okay, we're doing this, but we're uncomfortable with several things. And I really think everybody else is going to be uncomfortable with this as well. And we developed kind of we call it the Work Secure Suite. It is a technology application for our work from home operations, but it's really tackling a few things that everybody should be worried about, including us, is the background noise. You know, what do you deal with kids in the background and people working from their home? That's a concern. The kind of security and compliance around that, like how do you maintain information security? And then how do you kind of make sure we're up? You know, I've dealt with it off and on with your home internet service provider, a little up and down. We're like, what are we going to do when that happens? So we develop a Work Secure Suite that in essence tackles all that. So we have AI to help with the noise reduction. Just so you know, I have some pretty intensive construction in my house in the upper level. We're removing all the carpet and they're doing hardwood floors. So I'm not sure you shouldn't be hearing any of that background noise. Yeah. The compliance, the uptime, we're monitoring that constantly and kind of a scaled approach to it where it could be just a team leader saying, hey, you have any problems with it, to tech support, to, hey, you obviously your home internet service provider is not working. You need to come back to the call center. And then the one I'm most interested in is that security piece. So, and we actually have like cameras that are monitoring who's in front of a desktop, as well as maintaining that clean desktop environment. Because that's something that I can never get my head around, if you're PCI compliant, how are you going to make sure there's no paper? How do you make sure there's not a cell phone taking a picture of anything? And then if you live in a shared space, do you have roommates? Do you have children? Do you have spouses that are walking around? And how do you maintain that safe environment? So that's something that how we adapted to make sure we deal with it. And it's constantly evolving, to be honest, Jason. As we've grown global, how do we share, like, for example, agent engagement across Belize, the U.S., as well as the Philippines? And that's some adaptation to that around. How do we find the best way to engage them across that? And that was something interesting we did. We always used to have a family day in Belize. It was exceptionally popular, but we had a virtual family day, including a talent show. So Transparent BPO has talent. People are singing. There's musical acts. And it was a really quick, responsive way to try to build some engagement and build some community with, even though everybody's working from home.
I love it. And the innovation you talked about, it's so interesting because it's things like I haven't even faced or thought of, is that PCI compliance, right? And what do you do? Like, somebody's at home and they're dealing with, you know, sensitive personal information for clients.
Yeah. I mean, you're
whatever. And then you don't even think about, like, okay, they're not, like, if they were in the office, they wouldn't have paper, they wouldn't have their cell phone, they wouldn't have these things. Because they're, you know, compliant to the requirements.
Yeah, you've been in many contact centers, Jason. And just think about, like, a traditional call center where you go to the main desk and security lets you in, you sign in, you get a picture of your face. Then you know, if you're an agent, you have a locker to put it in, you have a badge access, all the security around maintaining information security. How do you do that in a work from home environment?
Yeah. So it's amazing that you guys have done that. And I think that's one of the interesting things is what you just said, which is this pandemic has exposed that or shown, you know, if you're going to scale, if you're going to go remote and then do it safely, smartly, profitably, then you have to, like, keep in mind all these things that we all took for granted when it was physically in person, right? Like, I've been to your office, you know, the center, one of the buildings in Belize. And I know what you're exactly talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Security,
I know the lockers. I can visualize all of it when I was there. And then to then just, you know, take that assumption of how easy things are in person to go remote.
Absolutely.
Obviously, it's a huge step that everybody had to deal with, but it's interesting. Wrapping up here, what advice do you have right now and or moving forward, right? Let's say 21, 22. For other people on the business development sales side, from your experience, what you're doing now, whether it's call center related or not, like, what are you finding is working with clients? What advice, what best practices for other, you know, biz dev professionals?
I think just much like the organization, the brands are dealing with themselves, like, we were put in a discomfort as well. Like, you know, I was used to traveling a lot and going to conferences, and I'm more of a face-to-face guy, and my hands are moving, and I like eye contact and reading faces. So it all went to calls. And then when we do have a meeting, getting that comfort level of showing my slide deck, but also making sure I'm looking at faces, and we've all become a little bit more uncomfortable with that. And I think that's, we, as a business development professional, you have to challenge yourself, not even challenge yourself, maybe just become comfortable with being uncomfortable. And being okay with changing things up. I had some people that I always listened to, like Jill Conrath is one of my favorites still, with like her sales process in my life. I've read every one of her books, but I'm like, you know what? I'm going to open it up and read a few more. So it was a little bit more podcasts. It was a little bit more, you know, grabbing a couple books of someone I haven't read before, just to get some more ideas of what's out there. You know, it's, our contact center industry is a close-knit group, but you have to work a little bit harder if it's all virtual. So reaching out to some more folks and just think, how's, you know, it's almost like just wellness checks. Like, how are you doing? And, you know, what's going on? And not laying on the sales, just how are you doing? And how is your family doing? Just kind of getting a sense of what's going on. And then they do start sharing some challenges they have. So it was a lot more wellness checks, but really I think probably the ultimate thing was just changing how you do things a little bit. But as always, I'll go back to that numbers game. You know, when I finally, 2020 was a little tough because I think that people are a little bit frozen, like how I cut the, almost like let's write it out. And some people end up writing it out all year before they made a change. But this year has been trying to be as responsive and reaching as many people as you can. It's there's a lot of options out there, and a lot of people are still overwhelmed where they don't have as many resources internally. So it's not easy for them, like, oh, let's start a sourcing project and let's go look at 500 companies and whittle down to 100 and then send an RFP. They don't have time for that. So to provide this information quickly and succinctly, so they kind of understand, like, oh, you're in this bucket, you're a fit. Or, and sometimes it does happen where you're in this bucket, you're not a fit. That's okay, but at least you're aware of where you go and what bucket is. I think it's really important to be as quick and responsive as you can, because I think there is a lot of organizations out there that are dealing with a lot more challenges than they have in the past, and it's kind of a scary thing to, like, where do we even start? So business developer professionals can really be some great advocates and help a lot of these people out with figuring out how to solve that problem.
I love that list, just like all the other lists. For anybody listening this or watching this, they will definitely be in the show notes, because you've given some really cool lists. And that last part that you mentioned, the biggest word that jumps out to me is empathy, and always assuming the best in people, and keeping in mind, like what you said, is dealing with those potential buyers of whatever it is that you're selling and how overwhelmed they are. So somebody just got tasked with a new project and they're already overwhelmed. Maybe they've been working at home. Maybe they have kids. Maybe they have all these other things going on and distractions. And then now you're calling them and emailing them and they're already overwhelmed and busy. And so keeping in mind, like what I remind myself, and I work with teams on all the time, is remind myself and others, like, maybe they're not responding, not because they don't want to talk to you or they don't like you or the answer's no and they're afraid. Maybe they're just busy.
They're right? Always
just follow
busy.
Up in an empathetic way. Don't do what I get a lot, which is 2 calls a day and an email a day wondering to follow up, because that's just gross. Like, you've got to give people time. You've got to find the right balance, but you also just, you know, understand people are busy. I just even had that today where I've been waiting for someone to make a decision. I sent another follow-up, you know, to get some feedback. And they're like, we're dealing with a whole bunch of things. We'll decide in 2 weeks. And it's like, perfect. And I just assumed, like, I know when they're ready, we'll move forward, right?
I would say that, and you had an earlier question, I think almost every timeline, they always slip a little bit. But I think the slipping is happening a lot more where, you know, you get that initial, like, we're going to review, or, you know, this thing like that. There is immediate.
We're all excited. Let's do this.
And it's a lot more. You know, the other thing I think will be interesting, and it's not an answer, but I think it's probably the future, where I think all the brands, it's unknown how the consumers are going to change. I think we're on this to be determined how our consumers' habits are going to be, what they're going to buy, what industries they're going to buy in. I think there's an incredible amount of unknown out there as well. And I think that's going to be pretty interesting, of like, how do you support brands when they're not quite sure where they're going to be in 2022 and 2023 and where that's going to be. I think there's going to be a lot of exciting and really interesting changes in the future as everything kind of settles in, if they do settle in. It'll be really interesting. I think this is just the start of this year of what the future is going to look like.
And that's a great reminder for both companies, but then also individual salespeople, is if you're selling in essentially what you're doing, which is a B2B2C mode, you're selling a company and then you're helping them with the consumer side. You have to know both. You can't just be like, hey, I'm going to talk this marketing manager into hiring me. You have to understand, what are they dealing with? What is their market doing? What are their customers doing? And how does that affect it short and long term?
Absolutely.
That's a good reminder.
Yeah.
Perfect. Love it. So many good lists, so many good things. So for people who want to follow up with you, I know that the best thing is transparentbpo.com is the website for the company if they want to get more information. I also know that you are really active on LinkedIn. So if people want to look you up, Jason Stearns on LinkedIn, I'm going to guess you're probably one of the only ones on there. I didn't check, but I'm
gonna it's and I am, and that is my my signature as well. So easy to find. I would also, our website, we have always been very good at sharing what's going on in industry, you know, whether it's trends or how to deal with you know, rapport or rebuttals or whatever it is. So I think it's a great resource regardless as well. So I would highly recommend visiting the website.
I love it. I appreciate it. Just popped in my head from one sales Jason, to another one. I appreciate you coming on the show and being here and sharing all this stuff and lots of lists. Again, make sure anyone listening, watching, check out the show notes, get the information on there, some of the lists. Again, Jason, thanks for taking some time and sharing all this stuff with the audience on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Jason.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at CutterConsultingGroup.com.